Welcome back to another episode of The Witch Doctor, a podcast audio play brought to you by me, Aquanimous Rex. Just a few things before we start. Firstly, this episode we will have a special guest who will be voicing the characters of Sarah and Rebecca Siegel. This is my friend Allie.
Hello.
As you've already noticed, I've had at least one other person on before, and I realized I should be in some capacity introducing them, especially since I'm going to be working on the Chapter 1 compilation that I mentioned during the last episode. Secondly, for all of those who want to help me or help the show, the best thing you could do is to tell other people about the podcast. In addition, it helps when people leave reviews, likes, shares, follows, and etc. on the various platforms, because it helps other people find the show more easily. On iTunes, for example. Anyway, I won't keep you in the introduction any longer than I have to. Thank you for listening. The Witch Doctor, Episode 11. Cunning. The stranger sat by a small cooking fire that the Siegel sisters could feel and smell but not see, their eyes open and gaping at nothingness. There had been little conversation during the preparation of the curative. The man keeping a careful eye on the older sister's shotgun, collecting scraps of dead grass and leaves, twigs that had fallen in the street and in the verdant sections between abandoned buildings. He had nonchalantly walked around collecting dandelion puffballs. The fluffy seeds, when gathered in abundance, would catch fire with a single spark. The stranger, this self-proclaimed witch doctor, had not yet introduced himself, nor had he been asked for a name. Everyone was tense and desired de-escalation, but not at the cost of personal safety. Sarah and Rebecca sat huddled together behind the car where they had originally intended to try to draw him out with threats of arson, meaning to shake him down for information at the very least, meaning to bring him into town hog-tied at the most, depending on exactly how the conversation went down. The cure for the blind root powder bombs was not difficult to create, and the stranger had all the necessary ingredients in the garage in his temporary home. A simple boiling of the same root he had desiccated and dried and pounded with mortar and pestle contained within it its own solution. The hard, barky outer layer, when powdered, would get caught in the mucous membrane of an eye and render it sightless. But the fleshy inner layers, when boiled, the skin of the root carefully removed, would produce a thick brown liquid that, after left to cool, could be used like a wash and would return to the two sisters their vision. After the decoction was suitably cooled, the stranger left a small wooden bowl full of it near the two young women, a couple of questionably clean cloth rags soaking within the muddy liquid. Here you go. Now be careful, careful. Don't knock it over. I don't have the resources to make another one. The man lied, easily and without guilt. He did not want them to waste it, surely, but could have afforded to make several large bathtubs of the solution. When Rebecca reached out to find the bowl, feeling the soft warmth of it radiating outward into the spring night, her sister seemed to sense what she was doing and grabbed her wrist.
Wait a second. Let me first.
The stranger watched silently, sitting on an old rusted trash bin that was turned over on its side. He had his hands in his pockets, one of them fingering an as-of-yet unlit powder bomb, the other a cheap butane lighter he had picked up in one of the southern towns. No chances. If they got ornery again, he was going to blind them once more, kick over the bowl, take their guns, and leave them there while he relocated. But he did not think that was what was going to happen, or he hoped they had more sense than to try anything shifty.
It's gonna make a mess,
But you want the liquid to wash away the residue. Don't let it sit. Sarah blindly glowered at him, chilling the man. He knew that these border folk were rough, living lives of extreme deprivation in exchange for a little freedom, away from the devout and their religious law, away from the gray stacks and their rampant pollution and crime. But he had never been this far north, had never really seen how rough and tumble things could get when you separated people from the civilization they originated from, though the women before him might have even been born in Noel, and as such were adapted from a young age to the hardships and dangers of extreme rurality. The stranger scratched with his thin leather-gloved hands around his throat, where the scarf that he had wrapped around met his skin. His eyes were still hidden by the taped-together sunglasses, the glasses which he used during his herbalistic and chemical activities to protect his eyes. Realizing that he had neglected to take any of his protective equipment off, he began to remove them piece by piece, starting by drawing down his hood, revealing a short and uneven shock of brown hair, jutting forward and sideways in places. He unwound the scarf, exposing a scruffy, thick, short beard and connecting mustache over cracked lips. When the sunglasses came off, it instantly made him look younger, divulging his age through the lack of wrinkles, lines, and crow's feet. At a quick glance, his years could be placed at roughly equivalent to Sarah Siegel's own, young 20-something, though it was impossible to tell for sure. His eyes were large and glanced around furtively, always returning to the loaded shotgun that sat near the foot of the older townie. The gloves were last, the stranger tucking them into his front trouser pocket, a large, thick black tattoo standing out against the pale skin on the back of his left hand, what looked like a large, lettered V. Sarah had the soaked cloth held up over her lifted face, both hands holding it twisted above. She wrung it and the liquid dripped over her eyes and ran down her face, soaking into the top of her blouse, staining the off-white material around her collar slightly. She opened her eyes as wide as she could, and then hissed when it stung slightly. Sarah continued to face the sky, as if in religious adoration.
I still can't see,
she complained. You just have to just blink. Blink rapidly. Just keep blinking, it will clear up. Or should, anyway, he thought to himself, silently. He had never actually used blind root on an enemy before, and supposed that he still hadn't, not entirely sure that the two fear-riddled townies in front of him constituted enemies. His adrenaline had never stopped flowing, and he felt twitchy and ill-prepared for the situation at hand. Why hadn't he just run, he thought, questioning but already knowing the answer. The garage wasn't important, merely one place in a string of temporary residences, but the project inside the building was immobile and temperamental. It had required an excruciatingly specific location to reach fruition, and in these last days his endeavor had drawn closer and closer to being finished.
It's working,
Sarah cried with delight. And the stranger glanced back up at her, watching as she guided her sister to the bowl, placing the rag in her hand. The stranger watched, glad that the cure was working, his faith in the solution somewhat shaken by the sudden dire necessity behind fixing their vision and the inexperience in using the powder against others, let alone in fixing it afterwards. It took a moment for the man to realize he was staring straight at Sarah, and she was staring back at him. He's younger than I assumed, Sarah thought. The man hurriedly lowered his eyes, focusing on a blooming dandelion with torn leaves near his feet, at a bit of grass with moisture clinging to their blades. When Sarah began to rub at her eyes, he spoke up. Hey, cut that out! Don't rub your eyes, at all, not until you flushed it with water, he warned them, and soon they had done just that, using a metal canteen that the man retrieved dutifully from the garage office.
So what's your deal?
The eldest sister inquired of the man, the three of them now sitting by the small fire that had been used to make the herbal wash, using two of the stranger's blankets as cushions, separating them from the asphalt and crushed stones beneath.
I mean, you come to our town, you live out in a garage, don't say nothing to nobody, walking around with your face covered. Nice improvement, by the way. Now you only sort of look like a serial killer.
The man did not respond at first, simply gazing into the fire. And Sarah realized he was sitting cross-legged like they were, but with one leg over the other in a way that made her knees ache just from looking at him. They sat there for a moment, the fire occasionally cracking and popping, and then he took a deep sigh and responded. I told you already, I'm a witch doctor. I'm here to help your town. That's all. Sarah looked quizzically at him and flicked a hand, furrowing her brow.
A witch doctor, huh? Really? And do we get a lot of witches up in Knoll? Is that what you think's been snatching our kids? Well, I hate to break it to you, dude. We don't believe in that bullshit up here. We have real problems, and we don't need to make them up. You're in the NT, and we have real monsters to deal with.
The man coughed into his hand, muffling a sharp, barking laugh. Yeah, I suppose you do, in fact. I've seen my share of muties since I've been shacked up over here. He settled back, resting his body on his palms, his arms stretched out behind him. But I don't think a witch has been taking the kids. He made the statement so plainly, and with an absent sort of finality, that Sarah and Rebecca remained silent, expecting him to continue, which he did not. Not liking the awkward pause, the younger Siegel spoke up.
I thought witch doctors were illegal. Didn't the devout say that witch doctoring's illegal? I've never met a witch doctor.
The man shook his head, gaze fixed on the dancing flames. No, it's not illegal. It's just complicated. You could say they stopped giving out licenses. They grandfathered in a lot of people, but detained most of them on suspicion of heresy. Most are in sanatoriums, exiled, or probably dead. Rebecca gasped, and even Sarah looked shocked at the news.
I thought witch doctors were the good guys. At least they always were in the stories.
Jack pondered for a moment. Well, they are in a way, I guess. I mean, we are, what's left of us. We unwitch, break bindings, cure ailments, physical and psychical. That's my living. That's how I keep money in my pocket and food in my belly. I solve niche problems with niche technology. It's why I've got to move around. Here, look. The man reached into his jacket pocket and pulled out a folded piece of yellowing paper. He held it out to them, and both of the sisters leaned in to read it.
And this is...
Sarah couldn't make out a lot of the fine print, but boldly on the top read, 2CCB, License for Witch Doctoring, followed by the monogram of the Party of Devout Fellowship, some signatures and some stipulations and outlines. It's my license, the stranger said, shoving it back into his coat, only now removing his thumb from the gold-inked name of Christian Solomon, which he had hidden from them deftly.
So, what's your name, anyway?
Rebecca asked him shyly. The man leaned forward, pushing himself from his former position, his tattooed hand illuminated by the fire, the big V stretched over the tendons and sinews and skin. Jack, he said. Jack Knave. This has been The Witch Doctor, Episode 11, Cunning, by Equanimous Rex. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for future episodes. Music attribution. The intro is Come Play With Me by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. The outro is Iron Horse, also by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Both of the songs are licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.